Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:21 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time, and today is August 8th. And today I thought that I would highlight some of the more interesting charts that have really popped up rather than focusing on individual issues, because there are a number of charts that I noticed in my daily click-through that merit some attention. Not least that, for example, the Indian rupee is making a new high. So this is obviously this is shown inversely, so this is the dollar falling against the Indian rupee, and this is the most, I guess, when you look very clearly at this chart, you can see that there was a dollar progression of higher reaction lows even following the massive acceleration that we saw back in 2013, but that persisted all the way through until the beginning of this year, and now we've had an abrupt change. The consistency of this trend has clearly changed. The moving average is pointing downwards, the dollar is now encountering resistance in the region of the trend mean, and the rupee is making new highs. The Nifty index has paused. It got all the way up to 10,000 and in fact surmounted it, but we're getting some pause and consolidation in the region of this big psychological level. That's hardly unexpected considering how well the index has performed so far this year. But what it also highlights is that that institutional investors, people that are truly global in their outlook, what they really look for is currency market appreciation to complement the potential for capital market appreciation. That's when you see international investors starting to move into an emerging market. And that's certainly been more than evident in India over the balance of this year so far. So the fact that the rupee continues to advance would suggest that the Nifty is probably in for nothing more than some consolidation of what has been a powerful gain. And there is something of an overbought condition relative to the trend mean. So we could see some maybe a pause over the next few months, or even probably not quite that much, but certainly that there is room for a pause in here. But as long as the rupee continues to appreciate, then that's unlikely to cause any panic among international investors, and they are likely to use it as an opportunity to, in fact, increase positions. So what happens with currencies is obviously going to play a role in people's decisions, and that's why what happened in South Africa today does bear some mention as well. We can see, for example, that the Rand has held a progression of higher reaction lows, or the dollar has been trending lower against the Rand since the beginning of 2016, and it is now testing the region of the trend mean. If we zoom in and look at it on the daily basis, then the Rand strengthened up yesterday on the potential for, or at least on the hope, that lawmakers would vote to oust Jacob Zuma. But of course, that has not been the case. The ANC closed ranks and ensured that he will remain in power, and that suggests that he'll probably be around for another 18 months at least. But what that has done now is the Rand has now weakened once more, and it is testing that 1350 area, which is the progression of lower rally highs for the US dollar. Considering how much the Rand has strengthened over the last 18 months, this is a key level. If the dollar sustains a move above 1350, it will break that medium-term progression of lower rally highs, and that would suggest that a fresh period of Rand weakness could be ushered in. The Johannesburg All-Share Index in nominal terms ranged for approximately 3 years, and broke upwards over the last few weeks, not least because of the relative strength of the industrial metal complex. And I will show some of those charts, because they really are worth looking at, and not just as on a combined basis, but on their individual merits as well. The fact that the index is breaking upwards is largely in part because BHP Billiton represents a significant weighting in this index, and the share has been doing better. Of course, Energy represents about 40% of BHP's revenues. So that has been a factor in its relative underperformance compared to, for example, Glencore or Rio Tinto. But nonetheless, it has bounced from the region of the trend mean and it continues to march higher. What is quite clear is that the progression of lower rally highs that was evident from that breakdown in 2014 has been broken, and that it has found support in the region of the trend mean, and then that would suggest that the recovery trajectory is still intact. The industrial metal complex is being led higher by copper, and copper prices were additionally firm in here today as it continues to extend its breakout from what was a very clear process of consolidation following the completion of a Type 2 bottom. And I think this is one of the best examples of a massive reaction against the prevailing downtrend, followed by a period of right-hand extension that one is likely to see. It's a textbook example of a Type 2 bottom with right-hand extension, and now we're seeing the reassertion of demand dominance in here. But it's also worth looking at, for example, the lead market. Lead prices have been pretty much range-bound since 2009 and are firming in a similar manner. We don't have quite the same big downtrend in lead prices. They have been largely range-bound, but this is certainly firming from the region of the trend mean. There was a rounding characteristic back in 2015 and 2016, and then this pretty impressive advance in the latter stages of 2016. And it is looking increasingly likely that it will be able to surmount that 2500 level. Then nickel is at the other end of the scale. It was perhaps the weakest of the industrial metals and got all the way down to test that 10,000 level. It's been ranging around this area for the last 18 months, but it is firming. It is back above the 10,000 level again. It's trading above the trend mean. Of course, it has been range bound, so the trend mean doesn't mean an awful lot. But if it can hold a progression of higher reaction lows, then there is the potential here that this a downward bias that has been evident really since that peak in 2011 will have been broken. And tin, which has been perhaps more politically influenced over the last while, is also firming from the region of the trend mean, and what happens in Indonesia will certainly have an impact there. And then just to round it out, it's probably worth taking a look at zinc as well. And this zinc price, I think, is rather interesting to compare with lead. That lead has been trading below 2,500. Zinc has been trading above 2,500 for most of this year, but it has firmed. This looks like a first step above the base, and again, a rather textbook example of what a first step above the base looks like. That you got this very lengthy range, then you get this breakout. There was a massive move. It was 100% from trough to peak, from the low in 2016 up to the peak at the end of 2016, and then you go into this rangy pattern. So, but the most important thing is that these higher prices have been sustained, which suggests that demand is back in the driving seat, and that the most likely path is that this range will be resolved on the upside. So certainly, we see plenty of evidence that the industrial metal complex is back in a demand-dominated environment. And of course, oil is still by far the most important commodity and also the most politically influenced. It is testing the progression of lower rally highs that have been evident since the beginning of this year, but it is a very volatile, rangy environment. It's trendless. That makes it more difficult to work with. And when we think about where is it easier to make money, then energy certainly doesn't cry out as a case where one has to be rushing in. And not least because there are so many moving parts in the energy complex these days. It is no longer simply just to think about oil or natural gas, coal, but the pace of innovation in the technology sector, where we have innovation in solar, in wind, and in storage technology that are moving out there. I think the way that I described it in today's commentary is that Tesla has opened a fissure in the energy complex, and then the number of companies that are rushing to push in to the conventional energy sector is increasing practically by the day. When we look at some of those commodity producing country indices, then, for example, the Russian index has been really quite firm, and it has firmed here from the region of the trend mean. It is bouncing from this 1,000 level, and it has obviously got both industrial resources and energy, but the most important thing is that it has broken that downward bias all the way from 2011. It's probably also worth looking at Sberbank, which is the country's largest bank. It's listed both in Russia and in London, and Sberbank is outperforming that domestic index in spades, and it is back testing the upper side of the range, evident since the beginning of this year. So, with the banking sector outperforming just about everything else, that's generally a reasonably positive sign, and that's despite the fact that Russia has been subject to sanctions from a pretty large number of countries. So, that also is a testament to the recovery in industrial metal prices and in industrial resources generally, that the stock market can do this well against the background of sanctions. I'm not for a moment suggesting that Russia is the most attractive market in the world, considering the state of governance, but the fact that it is performing is supportive of the argument that resources is an area which is increasingly gaining adherence, and not least because it is a cyclical performer and coming off of a pretty low base, despite the fact that it did so well in 2016. And if we stay with some of those resources markets, Norway is also worthy of mention here. It has been trending higher, and it was a little bit well, it was pretty much unchanged in here today, but it is at new all-time highs, and that's I think really worth considering, that this is a heavily resources and energy reliant stock market, and it is at new all-time highs. When we take a closer look at what's happening in Europe, and perhaps taking a lead from what's happening in Russia, then, and there certainly has been an uptick in interest in emerging markets, then emerging Europe, which we might consider as Eastern Europe, has been doing better. The Czech index has been firming, and it is at a new recovery high. And in fact, this area here around 1050 is testing the upper side of what has been a 6-year range. Then the Polish market was also firm in here today, and it is pulling away from this 60,000 level. So that's additional source of strength. The Baltic markets have been pretty much firm for the last year and a bit, and the Tallinn, excuse me, the Estonian market is accelerating at this stage. It is certainly the pace of the advance is picking up. Of course, this is a very small market and rather difficult to invest in, but the Romanian market is also firm in here. So when we start to string all of these things together, the potential here is that Eastern Europe is benefiting from the return to growth of Western Europe, and Western Europe is doing better. Now, when we look at, for example, the Italian index, it is making new recovery highs, and it's being led higher by its banks. And that's despite the fact that earlier this year, and indeed over the last few months, there's been a great deal of, I think, there's been a great deal of concern about what the banking sector is going to look like. But of course, we have ample evidence that the Europeans are willing to bend the rules in order to sustain the currency union. But when we look at, for example, the Euro Stoxx Banks Index, which is heavily weighted by French, Italian, and Spanish banks, rather, and because most of the German banks have been nationalized, then we see this progression of higher reaction lows over the last year, and it is back testing its recovery highs. And in the absence of a clear downward dynamic, the chances are that it is going to reassert on the upside. And of course, this is a recovery within what is an almost decade-long range, and then it is a cyclical trend within an otherwise very large base formation. in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment, then it is going to have to continue to range and break out, that the consistency of this advance is going to have to be sustained, and that it will have to continue to hold above the trend mean. If Italy is breaking out and the banks are doing well, then what that is also exhibiting relative strength compared to the wider market. The Eurostox index has been firming from the region of the trend mean, but not yet in a very dynamic manner, and it is yet to break that downward bias over the last 3 months. But it's certainly looking more encouraging that this is has been a relatively orderly consolidation so far. And of course, we should also be keeping an eye on what is happening with the euro. The euro's advance has paused, considering that it did race to get up to this level, and that 120 represents an area of resistance. Then we have had some pause, but certainly not in the kind of dynamic moves, for example, that we saw back in November. This was an overextended trend. The reaction so far has been relatively similar to previous reactions that we've seen within this uptrend. This move so far will not have, I think, shaken the complacency of the bulls here, but the more important point is whether it can hold the 116 level, which represents the upper side of that underlying range. The fact that the euro has been a little bit weaker in here has given at least some sucker to dollar bulls. The dollar has at least paused in the region of the lower side of its range. Obviously, the euro constitutes a significant part of this index, but it isn't the only constituent, and the dollar is now right back at the lower side of the range. It is really quite oversold, so there is the potential that we see some pause, some consolidation, or potentially even a short covering rally that would unwind some of the oversold condition. But one of the currencies that it is most oversold against is the renminbi, and the renminbi continues to make new highs. Something that has been clearly evident is the rising sense of urgency among the senior administration of China, where there is great sensitivity to any potential slight to the head people, where there is this massive political opportunity that is coming up in whenever they announce the date of the party congress. There are 5 seats opening up on the standing committee, and Xi Jinping has got a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to install his people, which would cement his power and his legacy. And when we think about the motivations of any politician, the thing that they're most interested in when it comes down to it is securing their legacy. They want their place in history, and that is exactly what any politician would like. But in a command economy like China's, then Xi Jinping has got this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to install his people. So they are not taking any chances. So even the banning of Winnie the Pooh, the closing out of VPNs, virtual private networks, and then the support for the currency, and indeed the support for the stock market, can all be viewed as a part of a broader plan to instill confidence in the population, in the current administration, so that they can cement power. And that would suggest that the most likely trajectory for asset prices, most particularly the stock market and the currency, at least over the next 3 or 4 months, is going to be higher. Now, when I just cast an eye back to my notes, one thing that did stand out in the commodity complex was the relative weakness of the New Zealand dollar. And it had certainly been rallying pretty impressively up to that 75-cent level, but it has pulled back, and it does look like we have seen at least short-term evidence of resistance in this area, and it would suggest that we are going to get at least a pullback towards the trend mean. But if it pulls back in considering that this is a dynamic pullback from a very short break above 75, that it does that. Let me be clear. When we talk about failed upside breaks at the chart seminar, one of the things that is something that sticks out is that when you get the dynamic of the failure being larger than the dynamic of the breakout, and that's certainly the case, then the potential is that it goes right back down and tests the lower side of the range. And the lower side of the range is at 69 cents. So in order to countermand that potential, then the New Zealand dollar is going to have to rally and rally in a dynamic manner and do so pretty soon. So that is certainly a something that is quite different from some of the other commodity producing countries. The Australian dollar had also broken out, but it has broken out in a more dynamic manner, and it held the advance. It is certainly consolidating, but the upper side of the range is around 78, so it has room in which to consolidate. It is quite different from what we're seeing with the New Zealand dollar. And the Brazilian market is also worthy of mention in here. So it is coming back up towards the 70,000 level. This has been an area of resistance since 2008. It is a bit overbought in the short term, so there is potential for a pause in consolidation. But you could also argue that it has already been pausing for most of this year, and if it can push above 70,000, well, then this would be the return to a demand-dominated environment in at least nominal terms. But the Brazilian real is also worthy of mention, because it is showing a very different trajectory than what, for example, we see in the South African rand. It is now testing its peak, and that is suggestive of that the process of indicting politicians in Brazil is progressing. And we might just, rather than view that as a sign of just how bad governance is, that we could also view that as an improvement, that they are actually being brought to justice, rather than their transgressions being ignored, which is what we can only conclude from what is happening in South Africa right now. So I'm conscious of the fact that one of the only markets I haven't mentioned in this broadcast so far is Wall Street. And part of the reason for that is that there's not a great deal to report, that the index has been really quite inert. That 2 weeks ago we saw that it rallied off its peak, and today it wasn't able to hold its advance. The index is pausing below the psychological 2500 level. And what is perhaps most important is that over the course of the rally from the low just before the presidential election, the consolidations have been in the region of about 50 points. And there was one slightly larger one between March and May, which was about 80 points. A reaction of 50 points is normal. A reaction of 80 points is something similar to what we had as the largest reaction. And if the index is currently at 2,474, then we should look at where is the moving average. It's at 2,354, and that is approximately 80 points. So if we have a reaction of 80 points, it will be nothing more than similar to what we saw in April, and it will constitute a reversion back to the mean. A reaction of more than that is going to be required to question the consistency of the advance. And so far, we haven't seen practically any move at all. This has been an incredibly inert market. Of course, betting that volatility is going to persist indefinitely would seem to be an exercise in futility, and the VIX was higher in here today. In fact, that is an upside key reversal relative to that downtrend that we've seen over the last seven sessions. But of course, upside follow-through would be required tomorrow to confirm a return to volatility. And the fact is that volatility has been so low that it doesn't take much to move this index any longer. We can see that, say, back in July or back in June, that the index moved by 6 points, which is 60% when it's coming off of a low value like 10, and yet the index itself didn't pull back by 60%. The index pulled back by nothing more than a few points. We've gone the longest period in history without a 5% pullback, to the best of my knowledge. So the fact is that we're going to have to have a significant uptick in volatility in order to question the demand-dominated environment. And the volatility on the government bond markets is also really quite low. This is the MOVE index, which is the Merrill Lynch option volatility estimate, and it is at new all-time lows. That is also something that is unsustainable beyond the short term. We are in this rather charmed environment where volatility is very low, and yields have been pretty much inert. They just aren't going anywhere at all. When we look at the Nasdaq is coming up towards this big psychological level around 6,000. It pulled back from that level again in here today and in the last hour of trading. So we are getting some pause and consolidation in the region of these big psychological levels, and that's as true of Wall Street as it is of a number of other markets. So there is the potential for some consolidation, but we have to be I guess the better way of talking about it is that we need to have some perspective that the market has done very well so far this year. There are overbought conditions relative to the trend mean, and unless markets are pulling back below the trend mean, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. I think that's really quite clear. When we think about what the potential issues that could come up are, then they seem to be a bit out there in the future. Obviously, in the US, there's going to be a discussion about what to do about the debt ceiling. There is obviously enthusiasm for tax reform, but nobody knows what exactly is going to happen. In Europe, we don't quite know what the effect of tapering is going to be, but these are all questions that are out there in the future. And so far, the volatility has been low, but of course, the volatility being so low means that it can really only go up, that the surprises are likely to be on the upside. So we have to be cautious to the fact that there is going to be some consolidation, and that what we see the greatest evidence of is that there has certainly been a move into emerging markets, and that Europe in particular is exhibiting, I think it is, when we think about Europe, it is the parts of Europe that were most critically affected by the deflation and recession environment that we had there are the ones that are now coming off of, are outperforming because they're coming off of such low bases. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.